Now or now?
If this is now, when will then be then?
Oh,
Soon.
Lone Star.
Who else would use raspberry?
Only one man dare give me the raspberry.
Lone Star, what?
We're doing Spaceballs over here. Foz and I are doing the radar scene from
Oh,
Spaceballs.
okay. I was like, what happened?
What do we got on this thing? A Cuisinart?
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with host Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller. Oh, it's episode 169 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. Today, a little bit of Lufthansa Group news. Not just Lufthansa, but the entire Lufthansa Group has announced they're going to be updating their seats.
Maybe-ish.
It kind of. In 2020,
well,
right?
Well, yeah, and we know it's definitely Lufthansa metal. The group thing is rumored, reported, supposedly, but none of the other planes specifically have called out the new product.
Ah, gotcha.
So, right, this is one of those things where Lufthansa eventually basically got to the same coach seat across most of their fleets, the Lufthansa group, to save money. And this business class is supposed to sort of be the same idea. But it's not 100% certain that they're going to get there, but expected that they probably will.
Yeah.
But,
and it's the Recaro seat.
Yes, the CL6710, I think, which is their sort of Recaro's top-of-the-line newest one, and then tweaked and, you know, refined for the airline customer, as is always the case, or is almost always the case. But it's going to premiere on the Lufthansa 777X when it starts delivery in 2020.
So Lufthansa will basically be behind the game in seats when this gets delivered.
Define behind.
Well, by then, by 2020, I have a feeling other products will have surpassed this Recaro.
Like the Emirates 232 layout?
You're
just
so,
saying.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, it's not very innovative. I think the is what I mean by this. Is this
I don't know. It's direct aisle access for everybody.
Yep.
It's still a reasonably dense layout, so the accountants are happy.
Yep.
But it also, there's actually one of the things that came out of it. They teased it on Thanksgiving Day, and then they actually put out a formal release on Monday with some real details about it. And so if you look at the pictures, like, there's sort of like the stagger of the Thompson Vantage seat that's like the JetBlue Mint and what Swiss used to have, or Swiss has in business. And so it's like your feet go under the seat in front of you in a cubby hole, essentially, but staggered, not straight away like B Diamond does, like the Continental seat does.
Yeah.
And so one of the interesting things about it is like the two on the outside looks a lot like United's Polaris on the outside. They're a little staggered from each other, offset, but the quote-unquote aisle seat gets sort of a table next to them in the window, and the window seat gets a slightly smaller table on the aisle side, and there's room for everything over there. And that's, let's call it normal, relatively consistent product. But then in the middle section, it alternates 2-1-2-1-2-1 going back. So the one seat is this, like, throne-looking huge thing with giant tables on both sides, because there's the footwell for each of the other two seats underneath that.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks huge in the pictures. And then they put out their release, and it says passengers can choose between having extra table space to work at or a longer bed. And so it's very, you know, read between the lines there. It's not even all that subtle. Basically, you know, some people are going to have more space. Some people are going to have this sort of longer version of the bed, and some people have a shorter version. It's a long bed. It's like, I think they said as long as 86 inches.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe 220 centimeters. Like, that's for very tall people. That'll be very long.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty cool. But
yeah, I think that's cool. I think what
but not in the throne seat.
Yeah. So the throne seat won't have that long of a...
Right. They haven't been explicit about it, but it seems that way to me from reading this.
So if they get the density, and you and I kind of had a debate about this, it looked like, you know, you said that it's the same seat that El Al put on their 787s.
Yes. So when you say they're going to be behind, it is worth noting that this seat will have been flying for 3 years when it comes out on Lufthansa.
Yeah.
So are you? So the answer, will they be behind, is yes. I just wanted to make you articulate it.
Yeah, and I think like the other part is the LL seat looks quite different. The LL seat almost looks like Polaris when you see the way they staggered it. So
yeah.
In the center section, you know, they put two on the outside, then two kind of in the middle, and then
yeah. So that's sort of like it's their pairs, and then it's mirrored.
Yeah,
almost
yeah.
Down the center line of the plane, and so yeah, I wonder if that's to do with the width of the fuselage and what can be done there. Although you'd think, you know, the 777X is going to be a wider fuselage than the 787, but are they more angled, perhaps, or did Lufthansa pick a wider version?
Yeah, yeah.
And, right, this is one of those things. Like the seats are all the same, except the part where they're all customized.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that Lufthansa went in this direction when they possibly could have gotten more density, but maybe they just know what the markets are going to be going forward. I don't know.
But I mean, I've never been on a lefty plane with the full business class.
Oh, I have.
I find it to be rare personally, so that might be part of the reason, is because they know they'll have the space.
Yeah,
and I mean, these planes aren't going to have first, right?
Well, that's an interesting note. These are replacing, what, the 343s that they have?
Probably a combination of the 343s, 346s, and the
744s, too.
Yeah, and the
747s. So the 343s and the 744s are all business class. The 346s, some still have F in them. So, yeah, I guess we won't see first, which is disappointing. I mean, Swiss has first on their 777-300ERs. So.
But, you know, you made the comment of, you know, they're going to be behind the curve. How much more innovation can we see in a business class seat at this point?
True, true.
So we go beyond flat to be inverted.
Like in one of the inversion tables?
There you go.
And when it malfunctions, your phone doesn't break, you do.
Oh, no. What sucks is when you hit turbulence.
Just banging your head against the floor.
Exactly, getting tossed around.
Thwack. Thwack. Yeah, no, I agree with you to an extent, Foz, right? Part of it becomes service, and part of it becomes, we've seen the airlines try to do creative things to get more density while not taking, you know, make it feel spacious while making it less so. And so you get like the, I'm blanking on the name of it now, but there's, I think Royal Air Maroc has this sort of staggered stacked seats where your feet, you know, one person goes high and one person goes low and the feet overlap each other. So right, but because they do that, the feet, when they overlap like that, you can get like an extra row in the A zone or something like that. Like it's, you get an extra row of seats essentially for free. So there are ways that their airlines and the seat manufacturers are getting better density while still maintaining full flat. There's a lot of different things at play. You know, we also are seeing with the Lufthansa seat wireless charging, which is new. It's pretty cool. I've seen the demo of the Panasonic's version of it.
Does it use the Qi standard? QI?
I would imagine what it's using, whatever standard exists. I'm afraid I don't know the names of the standards for that stuff. But okay. Yeah, like, I've watched at the Apex Expo show in October, you know, we were looking around at some of the fancy, like, sort of theoretical stuff that might be happening, and now this one has been announced. But, like, you put your phone down on the table, and, like, the table lights up and says, ooh, look, I see a phone, and then all of a sudden your phone starts charging. Right?
That's interesting and cool.
That is where, like, you know, anywhere on the table works.
Yeah.
So there are some neat things. They're doing a, you know, Singapore Airlines, you can, like, put together your playlist of what movies you want to watch before you get on board. The version they've announced of that, it's called the Companion App. The version of that that they're announcing for Lufthansa is not only can you put together the list of stuff you want to watch, but after you pair your phone to your seat, you can actually control the seat movement and your playlist from the device. So, you know, if you're sitting there playing games on your phone while a movie is playing in the background, you can switch to the other app, fast forward, rewind, switch movies, whatever, and then switch back without having to find the controller and do all those bits.
Interesting.
So there are some neat things that are coming out of it, but ultimately, you know, a flatbed is a flatbed, and you do eventually run out of things to do there.
Yeah. And that's my point. I mean, the screens get bigger. That's probably about the only thing that continues to evolve, but that's minor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this and these will be big screens. I don't think they announced the specific dimensions, but let's assume Vary is one of them.
Yeah, so let's talk about the other upgrades to the Lufthansa product, the soft product in particular. They're going to now have a new blanket, a bed, what would you call that? A
mattress pad?
Mattress pad, yeah. And then they're going to give out sweaters, like a sleeping sweater in business class. And we kind of joked before the show, but who really
who needs a new heavy blanket? Yeah, the press release is to make sure that you stay warm on board. We've got a new blanket coming in. I didn't realize that there's ever a problem with people not being warm on a Lufthansa plane, so I'm a little surprised that was an issue. But
yeah,
well, they're taking their cues from the European Airport Council.
We don't turn on the AC ever.
Who needs AC?
I can just imagine myself sweating to death on a Lufthansa plane.
But the good news is you'll be sweating through the Lufthansa sleep sweater, not your own clothing.
This is true.
You know, small victories, Stephen. Small victories.
I swear they turn on the heater. Like, they don't just not turn on AC, they turn on the heater.
Well, I had one of my followers, when I shared that idea on Twitter earlier, one of my followers insisted that every flight he's been on has been freezing cold. I stopped short of suggesting he check with a doctor about circulation problems. But if you're listening now, and you follow me on Twitter and you made that comment, you are the only one, and perhaps you should see a doctor. My highly unscientific, medical advice.
I mean, have any of you guys been on a relatively comfortable long-haul Lufthansa flight?
There's a reason that grown men walk around without their pants on in Lufthansa first class. And I'm going to go out on a limb and guess it's because they're very warm.
And we've come full circle.
Yep.
LH no pants.
Yep. Any other thoughts on the soft product? I think they could do with the new pillow, personally. If you guys have flown their business class recently, they have that mini pillow or whatever. It's about the size, maybe a little bit bigger than the United gel pillow. And it's useless. That's my two cents.
Okay.
Seth is unimpressed.
I'm trying to think now when I last flew Lifty Business, and I flew it this year twice, but it was back in the first half of the year, so I don't really remember it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think the current business class product from Lufthansa is pretty subpar, for sure. Unless you're traveling with a spouse or friend, it's the foot well thing is pretty awkward, and it's just an unimpressive product. So hopefully this means something.
You know, what I would say in response to that is I think I agree with you that it's not anything luxurious. I think it's always supposed to have been a 70th percentile product.
Mm.
Right? It's supposed to be better than the true low-end random one-offs.
Yep.
It's, arguably better than Emirates because it's been fully flat the whole time where the 777s on Emirates aren't, and where you've got, middle seats.
Yeah, true.
Right, there are some ways in which makes it better than United's IPTE also, right? There are ways in which it's better. At the same time, Lufthansa is still keeping first class, at least for now, not retiring it nearly as aggressively as everybody else, and so they somewhat purposefully leave business class not quite as good because you don't want to give away everything and have people decide that, maybe it's time I stop flying business.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point.
The counter to that is they also added premium economy.
Yeah, yeah. So slightly cheaper product with some features, just not lie flat, basically.
Yeah, it's upgraded. Right? I mean, we've talked about many of the various premium economy products over the years, especially because I've started flying a lot of them and I like to talk. But it is more space that you get back to being comfortable, not necessarily a bed.
Mm-hmm.
It's what business class originally was.
Yep. Yep.
And so as we see more airlines shifting away from first class and making business class, their top product, premium economy becomes the second product. And when that happens, business class gets way nicer because that is still what people are sort of splurging on, but ultimately you also have to deal with this problem, if you will, of how do we differentiate and not cannibalize too much. Again, going back to the joke earlier, the bed's not going to get any flatter.
Yeah, yeah. So you have to do something to be different.
Yeah.
What else do we have? We've got some new routes from United, American. Is Delta add anything new?
They're putting non-flatbeds to Europe.
Really?
Yeah. They're Iceland and Azores service and maybe one other.
Shannon.
Yeah. Are going to be on recliners.
Wow.
Because they're moving those planes to San Diego, Vegas, and Seattle.
Yeah, they're matching Delta Mint. One stuff that we talked about.
Yep. Yeah, they're matching JetBlue Mint, so they kind of have to.
Wow. I mean, I was kind of interested in their Azores service. I guess it's not any worse than SATA and what we were originally going to fly over there on their recliners.
But that's a new airline.
True. So United is adding 10 new routes. Let's see, they're going to add 4 from Los Angeles. Medford and Redmond start April 9th, and then Kalispell and Missoula seasonally start in June.
Have they started Portland yet?
No, which is amazing because they're starting Medford and Redmond.
Fosby made all the good jokes.
Thanks, Foz.
You're welcome. But that doesn't, that intrigues me that they haven't done Portland. Everybody does Portland now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this like, it's so cool that nobody goes there?
Exactly. Like, Wilmington, North Carolina is one I don't understand. They're adding service from, 2 different cities and
Dallas to Wilmington, North Carolina.
It's and like, Chicago. And Chicago. And Americans adding service to Wilmington as well.
What's going on in Delaware?
No. It's not Delaware, Wilmington, North Carolina.
Oh, what's going on there?
Americans adding Dallas, Fort Worth to Wilmington, North Carolina.
So now I'm going to look up what's happening there.
I think I read something that there might be a new movie studio there.
Really?
Yes.
All right.
But I would say, why wouldn't you have L.A. service at that point? What's Chicago, Dallas, and Dallas going to buy you?
Oh, it's home to EUE Screen Gems Studios, the largest domestic television and movie production facility outside of California. But it's been there since 1984.
Okay.
Anyway.
Maybe they ran on Black Friday's special.
on new routes?
No, the studio.
We'll produce extra movies on the cheap.
Exactly.
Yeah. One that's interesting to me, Oakland is getting new service from American down to Dallas.
But why? that's what I understand. I feel like the majors are now just scrambling wherever there's an airport where a low-cost carrier doesn't exist, they just need to add as many flights there as possible.
Well, Oakland to Dallas is like trunk route for Southwest, isn't it?
Well, that's a slight exception, but like all these others, like Myrtle Beach, Asheville, Wilmington, Bozeman, Flagstaff, Medford, Americans adding 1 weekly Chicago-Bangor flight. I don't know what that's going to do for them.
And United's adding 2 daily round trips between Newark and Elmira.
Yeah.
I don't even know where Elmira is.
Just south of Ithaca.
Oh, okay.
Corning Glassworks is there.
Oh, okay.
So there is, business to be done there, and it's one of those weird destinations that has had service off and on over the years and never consistently and never enough. Mm. Back when I was living up there, which I was reminded this week was a long time ago, there was actually at times when U.S. Airways would fly it, and they do a triangle route between Ithaca and Binghamton or Elmira and then onward back to Pittsburgh.
So there's
some weird, yeah. And I'm annoyed just because in retrospect, I was one of those, I wasn't necessarily keeping track of everything at that time, but I sort of knew enough of what I was doing, and I never actually got the true triangle route. I never got the short hops on that one. I always only got just the Ithaca to Pittsburgh flight or Pittsburgh to Ithaca.
Oh.
Yeah, but I did get the Rochester-Syracuse flight when Delta did Atlanta-Rochester-Syracuse as their triangle route back in those days. So that's a fun line.
So what else do we have for new flights? Any other routes that are interesting? I mean, there's Denver-Jacksonville.
Denver-Jacksonville, I was going to say. That one, Jacksonville's another sort of weird operation in terms of how much business is going on there. It's actually a reasonably, you know, commercially successful town, big city down in the south, right on the port, right on the coast. It has a big, huge port operation, huge naval base there. So it is a big city, but also like there, I can't remember who, someone tried a Kansas City flight for a while from there. I just, it's a little surprising to me to see Denver. Do you have the flight schedules handy?
Let me see. I don't have the timings for it.
Yeah. I'm curious what the, time of the Denver flight is. Like, are they trying to connect Denver traffic to Tokyo? Or excuse me, Jacksonville traffic to Tokyo? Or something like that. That,
I mean, that would seem silly, because you can just put that traffic through Dallas.
Or Newark.
Or Chicago. Or Newark.
So, yeah, but you're trying to support that flight. I mean...
Yeah, but Denver Narita is only 788. Whereas you've got 777s coming out of all the other hubs. You're going to have more capacity on the other routes. Right, you can fill that 788 with local feeder routes out of Denver because there's so many of those.
Yeah, fair point.
There's no timings on the United press release. The other one that's interesting is Chicago El Paso twice daily on an E-170.
We'll call that the drug runner special.
From Mexico to Canada, and then Chicago Fresno will be seasonal as well.
Also on a regional jet, on the E-Jet, right?
On an E-Jet, like
E-70s. Nice.
Because Fresno's the hot destination. I'm telling you, next is going to be Houston Bakersfield all over again.
Well, I'm telling you, like Fresno in
that
the summer.
That was on a 145 when they ran it, wasn't it?
It was.
I don't know who's going to Fresno in the summer. It's like 110 degrees.
They've got a craft factory there.
Oh, like, maybe it's actually to get people out of Fresno and to Chicago.
It's an evacuation flight.
WOW Air is expanding service from Newark. Tell me about
seasonal.
This.
So. Seasonal, but they are adding an extra 6 flights a week from, I think it skips the Monday flight. They're adding an extra second flight out of Newark to Reykjavik, to Keflavik. Oh. And, you know, it just so happens to line up with that change coming around the time that United decided to, hey, maybe we should actually compete and try to fly some of this Iceland stuff. So that coincidence is impressive to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And are they going to do it on a 321, I'm guessing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's, I mean, we talked about Iceland last episode and the Dallas situation, and obviously that's similar in some ways just because of hub protectionism and whatnot. But this, I tell you what, man, it's crazy. The amount of capacity going, even just in general, the amount of capacity crossing the Atlantic because of all this is just ridiculous.
In Europe, Powder, I think it's supposed to be like Powder, has suspended service. They're a Swiss, they're a Swiss airline, but they fly out of Antwerp.
They're welcome to Europe, man. They're a Dublin-based corporation or an Ireland-based corporation and they never actually launched. They're supposed to launch next week or the week after. They basically were catering to mostly Brits, and they had this Antwerp flight also, who wanted to fly up into the Swiss Alps to go skiing.
Oh.
And so there's this tiny, it's Sion, I guess Sion, is this airport up in the, you know, in the foothills of the Alps. But you're a half-hour drive to some of the resorts, half-hour to an hour, rather than being in Geneva or Zurich where you're like 3 hours away.
Mm.
And they were going to fly a mix of CRJ-200s and Saab 2000s, so some jets, some props, in from London City, London Luton, Southend, was it Southend or Southampton, one of the two. They're just like Bristol, Manchester, and then this Antwerp flight. And the goal was to funnel, you know, it was this like cool hip, we're focused entirely on the skiing crowd. You'll be with your friends the minute you get on board kind of scene. You can buy like 10 or 20 packs of coupons for a 20% discount. There's all sorts of interesting things going on there. And then this week, you know, 2 weeks in advance of when they're supposed to actually start flying, apparently one of their one of their investors walked away with like a couple $1 million.
Huh.
And so they're in panic mode now with in the like, we need like £1 to £3 million. So call it $1.5 to $4 million to try to like get things back moving.
Wow.
And yeah. And they questionable accuracy, and you know, I just don't know the source that well. But one of the sources reporting it said that they'd sold tickets to at least 5,000 people so far, which, looking at the doing some math, you know, very quick math on what that means revenue wise, it looks like it's $1 to $2 million, and they're looking still for $3 million in, you know, financial backing.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, that doesn't add up real well, does it? they need more money than they think they have in theoretical revenue, and they thought that the theoretical, and obviously, you know, not everybody has bought all their ski season tickets for, you know, now through April, but still, it was an interesting for, you know, this random no-name startup that's done a lot of marketing and had deals cut with, you know, local businesses at both ends to provide benefits and yada, yada, yada. But one of the interesting sort of casualties of that move is it seems that Darwin Airlines, which was Etihad Regional for a few years and was known as Fly Babu before that, it was Etihad Regional, then it was Darwin again. And now it seems to be living up to what we can generally consider the common use of the term Darwinism, which is to die. yeah, it did not evolve, as it turns out. So they apparently the Saab 2000s that Pound Air was going to fly were coming from Darwin. And with that contract now apparently dead, Darwin filed for bankruptcy protection.
Wow. Oh, wow. Taking people with him.
Yeah. So pretty bad week in Switzerland.
Yeah. Yeah. Foz mentioned a couple of things that I didn't even know about. Foz, Brussels Airlines are 343s? Is that what you're talking about? What is this?
Apparently,
Eurowings.
Lufty's transferring some 343s to Brussels, but then Eurowings is flying. I don't understand what's going on, because Brussels doesn't own 343s to begin with.
Yeah. I was confused by your note.
Yeah, it's Eurowings operated by Brussels Air, is how those flights are popping up to, like, Fort Myers and Tampa.
From Dusseldorf, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if that's a union thing, because wasn't Eurowings somewhat limited in how many planes they could operate?
Quite possibly. I actually don't know.
By union rules? I also know that the part of the Brussels Air, it's now 100% owned by Lufthansa Group, right? I think there was a transaction, was it earlier this year or late last year, that changed the ownership structure, and especially the short haul was going to roll into Eurowings, but I guess some of the long haul was supposed to remain independent, if only because, like, the West Africa stuff was well branded and, you know, it was a known entity down there.
Yeah.
And so they wanted to keep it, you know, the Brussels airline operation. But if you need 343s, and they've got the planes, right? Those will come out of the Lufthansa fleet, if nowhere else. So they've got the planes, they can move them over, but if they have to move them over to a mainline, quote-unquote, operation, as opposed to the Eurowings for union rules, I could see that being part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just interesting the way they're shuffling things around.
Yeah.
And then
it's fun when you own all the different components and basically get to play that game, right?
Yeah. Make your own Tetris board.
Yeah.
Foz, you also mentioned BA and some repatriation that they may have to do. What are you talking about?
That was actually rather interesting. So as part of Brexit, BA no longer has authority to fly into most of the European nations. They have to set up treaties with most of them, if not all of them. And so there's some talk about them needing to repatriate into a EU country from outside of Britain, because the EU is really going to stick it to Britain at this point for Brexit.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting. It's interesting, you know, since we're talking about all these airlines being all over the place, yet, you know, being hubbed somewhere else, BA might have that same problem.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that one's going to be interesting. I think, you know, right, the big challenge is that, in fact, none of the bilateral treaties really exist anymore. So what traffic rights exist, and, you know, does the United Kingdom have to negotiate individually, or does it negotiate one EU treaty? You know, there's a lot of open questions right now. And I think that there's been a lot across, you know, many different avenues of what's going on in Brexit, many different industries. There's been a lot of questions about what does it actually mean and what's actually going to happen. And, you know, there's been like reports that, and there, like, there are these reports that have been produced that don't get published, then eventually some parts of them get leaked every now and then. But it seems that the UK government knows how screwed they are and isn't talking about it very much, so that's kind of awesome. one of the conservative PMs that was pro-Brexit is against having a border between Northern Ireland and Ireland, which is now an EU border between the United Kingdom and the EU and would technically require one. And his response was, we don't need a border, we just need, you know, an agreement on open rules and common, you know, sort of like common rules that allows us to agree on what standards are for, like, you know, moving things back and forth across the border, and then we just let it work. Which the response was, dude, that was the EU.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, congratulations, you've discovered a, like, common market economy. The thing that you tried to destroy, as it turns out, is actually exactly what you wanted.
You said no to that, as a matter of fact.
Speaking of BA, also, just for what it's worth, apparently IAG is either in the process of, or probably by the time this episode comes out, has confirmed it's going to buy out Monarch's slots at Gatwick.
Wow.
So, you know, especially for the low-cost stuff with Aer Lingus and Welling, will be an interesting play there. But, yeah, it seems they won the Gatwick option.
Seems like a little bit of a, you know, monopoly.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I mean, EasyJet is still huge there. Norwegian has a pretty big operation at Gatwick these days. There is, I think, some competition at Gatwick in terms of share. BA's play there is almost exclusively long haul. I don't know if they have any short haul. I guess they have some. They did have some. They have some holiday destination, regional Europe stuff.
Yeah.
But it's mostly, you know, it's a lot of long haul also. So I don't think it's quite as dominant as it sounds, but it is definitely still. Yeah, it, you know, BA owning more of London is still weird.
Yeah,
I mean, I always question the validity of having two hubs in the same city. Like, it's got to be an operational nightmare.
They run them as separate companies, essentially.
Are they separate companies?
They are separate bases and with completely separate scheduling. The planes don't mix. The crew generally don't mix.
But I'm talking about from a passenger perspective.
Yeah, Gatwick is more O&D. Heathrow is way more connecting. I was looking at some numbers because the APD is going up. I was still doing some research on that. And, like, Gatwick is just not built for connecting. It's something like less than 10% of Gatwick traffic connects and somewhere around 30 or 40% of Heathrow traffic connects.
Right. But as they add more routes, right, they're going to start having overlap. And
yeah.
So, like, in things like AirOps, it doesn't work well for you to be able to move people around because it's not an easy transfer between the two.
No, at all. I mean, you take a bus.
And that takes an hour. And you might get scolded.
You'll definitely get scolded.
Bus got scolded by our bus driver.
For what?
He was, what was it? Luggage that was too heavy. Because even though the airlines allow 23 kilos, the bus only allows 15 kilos per person, per piece of luggage.
And he was having to lift them and he was upset?
Yes. And it was a safety concern because he had to brake more. And
He was complaining the bus was actually too heavy and he could tell how heavy the bags were driving?
Yes.
That's impressive. Very sensitive brake foot there. So EasyJet apparently owns some 44% of the slots, at least by 2014, while BA was only at 16%. So BA's share there is actually relatively low.
Yeah. Yep.
That's according to Wikipedia, so it's entirely possible it's complete bullshit.
Last topic, guys, is China Southern and their impending leaving of SkyTeam.
Maybe. It is a strong maybe. It's the SCMP, South China Morning Post, it's a Hong Kong paper.
Yep.
Right? Put out the story this week of, like, this what if kind of, gosh, wouldn't this be interesting? Which sometimes is literally just some guy thinking, gosh, this is interesting, and sometimes it's someone has the story and has a source but can't really blow the source, so they write it that way.
Yep.
The theory is because of the new cooperation with American Airlines, which is setting up, or it's not a joint venture because you can't do that in mainland China right now between them and the U.S., but setting up closer cooperation with more code shares and lots of other stuff. As that comes along, how does American balance its partnership with Cathay versus China Southern? And does China Southern, because it's partnered with American now for the Trans-Pacific stuff, decide to move to Oneworld? And if it moves to Oneworld, does having two Oneworld airlines hubbed at, you know, Guangzhou and Hong Kong create too much competition for the same markets and force one of them to leave? And that last bit is really where I thought the story went off the rails.
Remember, this is also driven by the fact that Delta just purchased China Eastern.
3% or something like that.
Yeah, and so now they're getting buddy-buddy and closing. And so they basically – and what precipitated this originally was the country manager for Delta Airlines for China basically implied that they needed to leave.
He wanted to throw China Southern out now that they're partnering with American, because China Eastern and Delta don't want them in, like, competing.
Yeah.
Yep. And I get that. I mean, that's a noble concern of his. I'm not sure he gets to decide. In fact, I'm certain he doesn't get to decide. So that's there's also the part where, like, pretending that those two airlines really are competing over the same customers all the time is a strange one, especially that, you know, because of the way that border is set up, it's not like you're getting the same people. People going to Hong Kong don't fly to Guangzhou and then go down.
Yeah.
Some do, I'm sure, but that is not the typical play by any stretch.
Well, and what you thought was off the rails was probably the speculation that Cathay would go to Star Alliance.
But this isn't the first time that rumor has popped up. It came up a few months ago, too.
Yeah, that rumor comes up a few months ago, a few years ago. That rumor comes up all the time. I think more often than not, started by people who are loyal to Star Alliance and want Cathay as part of their options. more than anyone really looking at the business. But like that, and again, with the, gosh, how many airlines in the same region, same area do you need in one alliance? Admittedly, Hong Kong is a couple hours flight from Bangkok or Singapore, but, you know, the Star Alliance is not particularly weak in Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
It's very weak in South America, but Southeast Asia, not so much. Even now mainland China, they've got Juneyao, or however we're pronouncing that, as an affiliate member. Like, they have options, whereas one of the reasons it sort of makes sense is Oneworld has nothing in mainland China.
Yeah.
They're the outside looking in. And so from that perspective, trying to get, you know, a China Southern on board does make some sense. Also, China Southern's huge.
Well, isn't Cathay partially owned by Singapore?
Air China.
Air China. That's right. Yep.
So that's the other reason it sort of makes sense is Air China, which is a Star Alliance member, owns 70% of Cathay or something like that, 60%. They are and then Qatar Air was just bought 10%. It was big in Oneworld. So it's a little strange. Challenging situations.
The other thing about Cathay is not doing that well financially.
No, it's not.
I personally believe they really need a JV, and American just hasn't bitten work with them. They saved JAL. But for whatever reason, they've never been able to do anything with Cathay. And even there's not a lot of code shares you can buy on AA or anything. So they're very, very limited in their interaction. So I think
is the JV a regulatory issue, though? Would the governments allow it? Like, does the mainland China government have to approve that JV because of Hong Kong?
I wouldn't think that needs to be approved by mainland China, but they've never even tried to.
Well, you can't apply for an antitrust immunity joint venture unless you have open skies between the two countries also. Like, there are, like, so if that's not set up right, or if they know that's not going to happen, you wouldn't try because you know it's not going to happen.
Okay, I mean, but okay, put that aside.
I just remember that because Brazil is still dealing with that in the U.S.
That's fair. But put that aside. The American doesn't even do much in the way of code share or cross selling Cathay flights.
Yeah.
Right, and I don't really see BA doing that much either. So it's like, in some ways, I feel like Cathay is the bastard stepchild in Oneworld.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, I think
remember that BA's got Emirates.
Well, and the other thing that I start to wonder, but I mean, I was actually thinking about it this week. Oneworld, you know, American's now led by Doug Parker, which really was, you know, came from a low-cost carrier, which was U.S. Air, and before that, America West. You've got Alexander Cruz on the BA side, who came from Vueling. Is Oneworld the carrier of low-cost the alliance of low-cost carriers at this point?
Which is a really, really funny. I hadn't thought of it that way, and I really like the thought. It's funny to me because it advertises itself as a huge business traveler alliance. If they focused historically on connecting top 50 business markets, not every destination everywhere.
Yeah. But I mean, the experience on more and more of those carriers is becoming a very low cost carrier experience.
Yeah, I absolutely believe it. I mean, I agree with you. I just had never thought of it. I think it's interesting.
I think something you're right about, Foz, is American's lack of partnership with Cathay. Because even if you look on American for something to Southeast Asia, it will offer you JAL just about all the time.
And well, that's sort of like United offering AMA. They have the joint venture, so as long as it's a covered country.
Yep. So I get part of the reason, but at some level you would think, hey, to Southeast Asia, we've got these nonstops from all these different locations, including on our own metal. We should throw some business Cathay's way. But it just doesn't seem to be happening.
No.
And AA doesn't have a ton of lift into Tokyo. They just don't.
No, and JAL probably has less lift into Tokyo than Cathay into Hong Kong right now.
Yeah, yeah. So it is odd. I can personally say that I would love to see Cathay as part of Starlines. Just saying. Whatever, you know, Cathay, if you're listening, we welcome
and
you.
And so remember when I mentioned earlier about the people associated with Starlines programs drooling over the opportunity. It took you all of like 4 minutes to get there, Stephen. I'm impressed.
What? You're saying you wouldn't love it?
I don't think it would change my travel experiences all that much, I'm going to be honest.
What about you, Foz?
I'd like it.
I'm
not going to complain. Like, more options is always better, but...
Well, you're a diamond medallion or whatever now, so we know where your alliances lie.
No, I'm going to come up 106 miles short of gold.
Oh, you should just fly to Elmira.
Wrong airline, you moron.
Well, you can do Newark. They fly Detroit.
Delta?
Yeah.
Has Detroit to Elmira?
Yeah.
I know that Detroit, Ithaca. I didn't know about Elmira.
There you go. Done.
Done. Yes, that'd be a great day.
So either it has to get to Elmira to take that flight, or he has to get to Detroit to take that flight.
Both of which. Both of which you can do.
Turns out I am reasonably flexible. Resourceful.
Yeah.
Well, able guys, to find my way to certain airports.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a show. Any other topics? No?
Okay. Just a quick shout out. Thanks for the couple folks who chimed in on votes in last week's contest. I will reach out to you with prize information at some point in the near future.
Yeah, we'll talk about those results later.
In a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, so if our listeners want to get a hold of us, you can find us on Twitter at DotsLines, moredotsmorelines.com. Send us a note. We love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. Happy travels. Bye-bye.
Take care.
See you.